Hello, extra time.
Are you part of the league not to get a hoist? Because it damages your reputation. It makes people, when they read it, just laugh at you.
The single club, they're playing in the League One, and they're playing in the Europa League, and they're credit. And the game in this country. Maybe we should get something
handy down
to manage the
RMC. You're very welcome along to the ExtraTime.ie sportscast. I'm Declan Maron. Joining me on the line this week, ExtraTime.ie senior reporter, Dave Donnelly. Dave, how are you?
Grand, how are you?
Good, thanks, Dave. At ET Sportscast on Twitter, if you want to send us on a message, at ExtraTime News on Facebook to get in touch with us there, or ExtraTimeLive@gmail.com to send us on an email. Dave, we've got loads to get through this week. We're going to have a look at some of the latest results, League and Cup, and as well as that, look ahead to the Women's National Team games and preview the upcoming fixtures. Also talking to Dan Carr, who was sound enough, I suppose, to take a call for a couple of minutes with us this week. So loads to get stuck into. We'll jump right into Daniel's team. Shamrock Rovers beating Sligo 1-0, Dave, in what looked a little bit of a dredgy game, I must say.
Dredgy?
Yeah, dredgy. Like, not poor exactly, but just like neither team really able to capitalise until, I suppose, Shamrock Rovers did. Just didn't really have a lot going on for it.
No, it wasn't a great game. I think Sligo probably had the better amongst of the game. But obviously they were a bit toothless in attack. Your man Adam Morgan did an awful lot of work up front. He actually looked very lively peeling off the side of the centre half. But he had an awful lot to do by himself, and they weren't really effective. And over the course of the game, the only couple of chances Sligo really had were sort of shots on the edge of the box from off a mistake. It was really that sort of game. Rovers maybe made one proper chance, and our guest later on the show, Dan Carr, with a terrific finish from an absolutely wonderful cross from Sean Kavanagh, and maybe the only real bit of quality in the match.
Yeah, it's fair to say maybe this is the kind of game Rovers would have dropped points in last year, or maybe not, to be fair. Maybe that is just looking for a bit of narrative on it, but it did take, as you said, a moment of brilliance from Sean Kavanagh to swing that ball in. As I said, it didn't sound like an absolute classic game. Great goal to separate it. You got to talk a little bit to Stephen Bradley after this game. He wasn't delighted with the performance.
No, he wasn't, but I think you make a good point in terms of it's the sort of game Rovers maybe would have not picked up the points in the past. I know last season they had a draw and a defeat against Sligo, and maybe you would have expected them to be the stronger team, but they went out there on Friday night and they got a result. Probably it wasn't fully merited, but 3 points nonetheless. But I think he dialed down the expectation again after the match, and maybe that's just a feature of maybe trying to fly under the radar a little bit and maybe not create too many problems for himself, because I think he knows himself over the past couple of years. Anything he says seems to be amplified and analysed more than anybody else does. So, I think Rovers are still not out of the title race. They're certainly on the edge. They certainly, I think if they do continue to improve, they certainly have a chance. But at the moment, I think he's probably right to temper expectations to that degree.
I suppose, yeah, he doesn't want to sensationalise too much with this young team. Wants to sort of keep them going, as you said, downplay expectations a little bit. Well, look, let's hear him trying to do that. Let's hear him trying to keep the sensationalism away from one of the men who's going to stitch him right up, one of the hacks, Dave Donnelly. Let's hear the clip where you spoke to Stephen.
Yeah, not your best performance, but no. You got the result.
No, not our best performance, we know that. We had patches, we played okay, but overall, it's probably our worst performance outside Bowles. It's probably our worst performance, but credit to the players, they dug in, and the second half was a little bit better, and we got the win.
Particularly the first half seemed to be very little tempo to the game from either side.
Yeah, no, we didn't. We especially, when we're good, we play with a high tempo and we move the ball quickly. But first half we were just off it. We had one of them nights where we were off it. Everything was slow, both in and out of possession, and we were off it tonight, but look, we won the game.
It was having four changes to the team, maybe that kind of contributed to it?
No, well, look, I don't think the changes, there's no difference in our quality in our squad, in terms of who we bring in or who we take out. I think it's one of them nights, you have them as a team and as a player, just one of them nights that things, you're just off the pace, you're just off it, and tonight was our night.
And if you're not playing well, you need players to step up, and I think it was Sean Kavanagh with that great cross.
Yeah, it was a good, actually one of our best bits of play for the goal. We created an opening, got it to Sean, and it was a great delivery. And to be fair to Dan, it's a hard finish because most forwards give up on him because it goes on the wrong side of the centre half. But he kept going, and it was a good finish.
It's something you didn't really do for most of the game, which is really stretch the play from flank to flank.
Yeah, we didn't do much for the game, to be honest with you. Probably the worst it's been here in terms of our play, but the pleasing thing was we showed a different side of our game to go and win 1-0.
And Dan seems to be at the moment your preferred choice up front, and he sort of showed away.
Yeah, Dan's doing well. He's a good player, but we know Shaw's is there, Sean Boyd's there. It's a long season, you know, there's a lot of games. And all the strikers will get their run in the team. Right now, Dan's doing well and he stays in the team.
And the top four is going to pull him away at the moment after one round of games. Have you seen enough from the first round that you think you can still challenge for the title?
We never said we challenged for the title. We actually said that we couldn't. You know, we believe we need time to catch Dundalk and Cork, and nothing's changed there. I think it's everyone outside saying they want us to challenge or respect us to challenge. We've never said that we challenged Dundalk and Cork this year. We finished a lot of points behind them last year. It takes time to make that up.
How are you fixed for Monday now? Is it going to be a few changes?
Yeah, Monday we look at the team. We played long for the pre-season, so we know they're a good side. But we look to have a look at our squad, have a look at injuries tomorrow morning and see where we are.
Alright, and it's Bowes next Friday, is it?
Dundalk next Friday.
Yeah. How are you fixed for
the,
in terms of the squad, I suppose?
Yeah, no, we went and see. We plan now for Monday, get that out of the way, and then we look Tuesday morning how we are in terms of for Dundalk away. But first of all, we go and look at the cup game, and then we concentrate on Dundalk.
Alright, and just to switch Tomer out for Kevin today, is that just a form based switch? So?
Kevin, yeah, I thought Kevin did well tonight. I thought he was excellent. He came and was brave, came for crosses, punched things when we need to punch things, and his distribution was excellent, so I thought he was really good.
Cheers, Dave.
No problem.
Interesting words. What do you think that does to a player's mentality, Dave? Because they have to look at it in a different sense. I'll probably put this to Daniel Carr later as well. They have to look at it in a different sense because they have to surely be excited about winning every game, winning the title. That has to be the player's aim for Shamrock Rovers. They can't come out and say that, but it's the manager's job to maybe keep their heads, you know, focused on that one. But when you hear stuff like that, or when, like, it must be sort of more coordinated, a media coordinated effort to play it down, to not sort of big yourself up too much. But do you think that affects players?
I don't know how much players really pay to what's being said in the media by a manager. I think you know, they have their own feelings with them on a day in, day out basis, you know, more or less every day, every week. So I think they'll be taking their cues from what he says to them rather than what he says in the media. I don't know really what he's saying to them, to be honest. He's tempering expectations from outside maybe, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not placing those expectations on the players behind the scenes. And certainly I think everything I know about him as a manager, I think he is a bit of a perfectionist, so I really don't think he'd be sending his team out I don't think he'd be sending the team out knowing that they could, you know, not go 100% and not live up to their potential and lose the game and there to be no consequences. I don't think players are going to be coasting or anything like that in the knowledge that they're not being expected to win leagues. I think the expectation will be there behind the scenes, but I just don't think necessarily it's out there at the front.
I think he makes the right noises in a sense. He's aspirational. He wants to win the league. There's no doubt about that. But as he says, they have a fair bit to catch up on Cork and Dundalk. So this season will probably be a bit of a measurement as to how much they've done that. Well, let's look at a few other results. One of the ones that stood out actually was Derry 2, Pats 1. It looked like a fairly action-packed game actually. Some good goals from McInniff and Clark tapping in for Pats. But I think one of the standout bits of it was the last minute clearance from Darren Cole to really keep to keep the 3 points for Derry, a big 3 points as well, because it was just a couple of weeks there where it felt like maybe things were diving a little, maybe the momentum wasn't fully there, but now with the new stadium, a couple of wins on the bounce, it all seems to be going right for Derry.
Yeah, certainly the last couple of weeks, I think since the 6-1 defeat in Tala a few weeks ago, I think they've turned it around a little bit. They've got a couple of quite heavy wins, and they've got obviously 3 points against Pats, but maybe if you look back on the match, wasn't 100% sort of deserved. Pats certainly deserved something out of the match, so that, I think, pivotal moments like that last minute clearance, even in the first half, that this little goal from Jake Egan, which still can't understand, the only thing I can think of is that maybe the referee thought it looked like a high foot, but I really don't get it at all. I think Derry rolled their luck and, sometimes you make your luck a little bit, and when you have a goal scorer like Aaron McNeff who scores two absolute terrific finishes, you do end up making that luck.
I'm trying to be positive about Derry here, and you've made it all about Pats and how unlucky they've been. You're ruining my narrative here.
Sorry. But I thought the football on this play is very good too. I think I predicted it on the show last week before it happened, that the two teams, two fairly similar managers, they both have their own sort of passing ethos. They both, are loath to go forward too much, no matter what the personnel in the squad is. And I think it was a good kind of football between two teams who were, well able to play with the ball, and they're on what sounds like a very, very decent all-weather surface that allowed both teams to play that sort of football. But I think both teams are going to be okay to switch positions in the league now. But I think they might be reasonably happy with how they start the season, even though maybe a few disappointing results in there as well. They're certainly both set up to do well in the coming weeks.
And from Pat's point of view, just I wonder the issue for them at the moment. Is it just the finishing not been as good? Because, I mean, looking through that team and seeing how they've played, I've seen them a couple of times this season already. They do look solid. They do look, as you said, a team that can be quite fluid and work quite well together. They seem to be able to be relatively flexible in how they move about the place. But their finishing never seems to me, so far this season anyway, to have been nailed on to kind of kick them up a bit further the table.
Yeah, well, I think Christy Fagan hasn't really hit the heights yet this season. We all know what a devastating finisher he is on a day, but even, the couple of times I've seen him this season, he had scored the goal against Bray near the start of the season, but also in that game he had quite a bad miss from a decent position that could have really put the game beyond Bray an awful lot earlier, and Pat actually did manage to get the win. So I think he's been a bit off colour. I'm not sure if he's still suffering from the injuries he's had over the past couple of years. He was ill at the start of the season. He missed the first game against Cork, and he was still kind of feeling the effects of that for a while. But Neil Buckley's brought Jake Keegan in for the last couple of games. So I'm a big fan of him. He's a terrific player. He's a great touch, and he should have got his first goal of the season against Derry with that touch into the net ahead of Gerard Doherty. But it wasn't given. Maybe that's just the. Maybe that's just the rub of the green that maybe you don't get sometimes. Maybe it's the hometown advantage for Derry. You've worked out their way. But I think Pats do look like they're starting to motor a little bit. They maybe put the inconsistency of the last few seasons behind them, and they're, starting to play the football that we expect from Pats again.
Yeah, right. Let's motor through a few more games here. Just get through the last few games quickly. The Bastionary Derby happened. It went the way of Waterford. And himself and Holland are forced to be reckoned with in the middle by the looks of that one and by the looks of following them throughout the year, actually.
Hulahan, I believe, is for now.
Yeah, but, sorry, I always say Holland.
Yeah, well, that's two big wins for them. After win over Rovers and then going to Limerick, and Derby is always a bit of a different sort of game. You can't really go into it just looking at the form, but you also have to consider the element of two teams who they're used to playing each other in the first division. Now they're both in the Premier Division. There's not going to be an awful lot of love lost between the fans. So it's one of those games. But I think Waterford just seem to be very professional about the way they're going in the league this season. They're playing well. They have a good system set up. It's causing difficulties for other teams, and they're getting results at the moment. And certainly, they're making a very good case that they could be up in the top four from the end of the season.
Yeah, it's probably helped slightly by the fact that there has been, as Stephen Bradley pointed out, been a lot of talk for Rovers to go on and do well up the top of the table, or Cork to defend it, or Dundalk with their 8 clean sheets. It's probably good that they've sort of not really been talked about all that much in that sense. I suppose none of us, I don't know about yourself, Dave, I wouldn't put them down as realistic challengers anyway, but it's probably handy for them that there's not too much chat about them at the moment.
Yeah, I think there may be a couple of players short of contenders for the title, but I'm impressed by the bits I've seen from this season. Maybe playing against Rovers, against 10 men, they didn't really press on that advantage the way you'd expect an experienced Premier Division team to do. But you have to remember that a good few of the players in that squad aren't really they are professionals. They're not experienced Premier Division players. So that's a team that's going to grow as well over time. But certainly at the start of the season, I predicted them to do reasonably well. Very comfortable comfortably away from relegation trouble, I should say. But I wasn't quite expecting him to be up challenging for, you know, second or first at this stage of the season. But, you know, it's great to see. And as you say, Bastianeri is, I think he's, by the end of last season, he was a legend in Limerick, but I think very much a legend in Waterford now. And, you know, the Blues lost is the Blues game.
Still legend to me, I don't mind. he's wearing blue either way. Just, I suppose we'll move on, just talk about one or two of the other games then quickly. Dundalk, as I mentioned, got their another clean sheet. Is that eight? Is that what we said? The record is eight, isn't it?
Eight in a row, yeah.
Yeah, so
it happened before, but there's an asterisk over it based on a well-known League of Ireland shenanigans where teams ended up getting points docked and all sorts of So this is the eight clean sheets now. That's an out and out record, and you know, we can finally stop talking about the dark days and look ahead to times when the League of Ireland will be completely stable and nothing bad will ever happen.
A non-asterix record, that's what you like to see. But looked a comfortable win for them over Bowes, who we'll talk a little bit more about very shortly. And also, actually, just before we do, Duffy again. We talked about him being amongst the best players in the league. And once players like himself start firing in the same way that some of Dundalk's previous players did, that Dundalk will probably be flying again. And seems to be getting the knack of it at the moment.
Yeah, we did say at the start of the season that they had, what if they failed to score in three games? Out of those eight, and they've just, you know, it's been testament to their defence that they've kept those clean sheets. They haven't been dropping 3 points rather than 2 points out of those games. But I think we did predict that, you know, the more they went on, the more those combinations were kind of settled down a little bit, and players would start to express themselves a bit more and start to find their feet in front of the goal. And Duffy's one of those players that's always really impressed me, playing for Dundalk, particularly in the EA Sports Cup final last year against Shamrock Rovers and Tallaght. I thought he was terrific that day. He was probably, this after Dave McMillan, he's probably a standout player on the pitch. But I think maybe for Dundalk last season, he was overshadowed a bit by, you know, the creative talents of the likes of McElhenney and people like that. I think he's going to be expected to be a bit more of a main man this season. He's going to be expected as more weight on his shoulders, I guess, to create chances and things like that and score goals. And at the moment, he looks like he's starting to enjoy himself and, you know, start to get those goals and those assists.
Absolutely. Cork 4, Bray 0. I mean, what's there to say on this game? I think we probably all saw it coming.
Yeah, I predicted a defeat for Bray. I think in the end they said it was 3-0. But yeah, I don't know. Bray, over the past few years, they have caused Cork a few problems without actually getting any results. And I think it sounds like that was what happened again. By all accounts, in general play, Bray were quite good, and they were very unfortunate to be 4-0 down in the end. I think they conceded 3 goals in 5 minutes, wasn't there? 3 goals in 6 minutes. So I think it was, they were in the game up to a point, and then they were very much not in the game. But I suppose when you're playing against a team like Cork, and it's difficult to chase the ball around an awful lot and to be trying to create something when you have another team who are flying or they're in great, great confident mood and they don't concede an awful lot of goals. Maybe just burn out a little bit. And then, you know, when you have players like Kieran Sadler who can score goals like that, then it's always like it's all one way.
Now, there was a couple of EA Sports Cup games played as well, and we'll talk about them in a bit more detail, I suppose, later on in the rounds of the Cup. But, Dave, you were at the thriller between Bowes and UCD, 2-2, that one finished. Paul Doyle missing the last penalty, and Owen Stokes scoring one to put Bowes through. And you spoke a bit to Colin McCabe after the game, so let's hear that clip now.
Thought it was a good game. I mean, I thought the fans got, 120 minutes of good football. Thought UCD in the first half deservedly 2-0 up. Just never got going. They passed it well. We gave them too much space and too much respect. But in the second half, you've seen our class. We upped the tempo a little bit. We hounded them. We got chasing after them. And the boys got the goals. And then extra time, just a matter if you could nick one, you know. But we didn't nick one. And the boys had excellent finishes on the penalties there. And just happy enough to make the next round.
Yeah, it's just on the second half, two big saves from the one-on-one and then at the feet as well. Do you think that once you save down, it's going to be your day?
I thought we could have nicked one. Yeah, I thought we could have went on and got the third in the second half. You know, like I said, we made the saves and we had gotten the goals. But I was just hoping that for all our hard work that we didn't, concede one for all the efforts we did in the second half. But thankfully, you know, thankfully I made the saves and thankfully the boys done the work and, like I said, went to the next round.
On the two you conceded, I don't think you really had a chance with either, did you?
No, I think the first one was, I think, I don't know who it was that played in the ball to the winger coming in and he's finishing it good on first time. And the second one is a good finish. Like, you know, I've got fingers to it. Potentially a little bit disappointed that I've got fingers to it and not saved it, but at the end of the day, I think it's in close enough to the top of the corner. So we'll give him that one.
And I know you're playing in goal, but in terms of playing on the pitch, passing the ball around, did you feel it cut up a bit? Or?
I think it did. Yeah. In the warm-up, it was noticeable that, you know, from the start, you could see that it was cutting up, which made it slippy on your touch and on your feet. But that was for both teams. So, you know, both teams had to adjust to that. I thought the standard of football was quite good considering the pitch did cut up and following the large amount of rain that was before the game.
You did seem to go a bit more direct in the second half. I think with the pace you had on your side, it really sort of exposed him.
Yeah, like we said, we've got good players that came on and we've got good players in the wide area and creative players, you know, front four creative. We just didn't create enough in the first half. But like I said, we upped the tempo in the second half. We used our pace, we used our strength up top and we put them under pressure. And I think we obviously got joy and we kept going and got the goals.
And looking back on the shootout, so it's fine margins. Connor made a save and just backspin on the ball goes into the net.
Absolutely, I was just watching it and I could see it spinning and spinning and spinning. And I was hoping that he wasn't going to get up and save it and claw it. But at the end of the day, penalty shootouts are just a bit of luck in here and there. And unfortunately, he saved it and it didn't stay out when I saved it, and it did stay out, and that was the difference in the end.
All right, and what's your expectations for the season now? I know Shane is a big player to keep out of the team, but are you confident you can get two games?
Listen, I'm just hoping for as many games in the cup. You know, in the back of my head, I was thinking that if we had lost this, I could have lost me games. But thankfully that, you know, we're into the next round. I'm hoping to, first of all, keep developing and put pressure on Shane. Shane is the number one. He's the vice captain and deservedly so. Unbelievable last year, and he's not started too bad this year as well. So, if I can keep doing well in these games and putting pressure on, that's all I want to do. And hopefully, you know, if I get a run in the league, I get in the run in the league.
Some interesting quotes from Colin McCabe there, Dave. Just in relation to, he probably won't get too much game time. And as you said, when he was 2-0 down there, he said that's kind of what was that was on his mind, that he probably won't play many more games. But how did the game itself go?
Yeah, it was a, hate to use the old stereotypical game of two halves, but it really was. First half, UCD were extremely impressive. I've tipped them to win the first division this year, and I think they lived up to all of my expectations in this game. You know, they were a little bit more experienced than the Bohs team. There was a few experienced enough players in the Bohemians team, a few older players, but you know, the UCD team, they've probably been together for a year or more, so their experience did show in the first half, and they, you know, they passed the ball really well. There was one spell, I think maybe 15 minutes from the end of the first half, where all 1-2 touch stuff from UCD, and Bohs were just sort of chasing the ball around. They didn't get anywhere near it. So, they were deservedly 2-0 up. They could even have been more goals up there. There was two absolutely excellent finishes from Yo-Yo Maddie and Gary O'Neill, both of them, with Darryl O'Connor. They were two terrific goals. And they went in 2-0. And I think there was a really flat atmosphere around the stadium there. I think a lot of it was the one game of the four in Dublin, and one of three that went ahead in the entire country on Monday. And I think a few of the Bohs fans at halftime really would have been wishing that the referee had done them a favour and called the game off at that point. But it's completely different in the second half. And yeah, Collie O'Neill will speak about it later. We'll hear about it. You know, he felt in the second half it was just a case of his players got very tired. They had that late game on Friday night, 2-0 win over Cove Ramblers, and started at almost 9 o'clock. Very heavy, very soft pitch up in Coleman's Park there on Friday night. So maybe the recovery from that, I think in the second half they really started to feel it, and the pitch again was very, very sort of wet and difficult to play on. So I think they just caught up with them there. But I think second half Bohs went extremely direct. They brought on a couple more quick players and moved Owen Stokes up front. You know, again, very quick player, and they just sort of played into the corners. They just really sort of stretched UCD as much as possible and really seemed to work. And I think by the end of the match, I think it was UCD are really, you know, what's the phrase? They were out on their feet, I suppose, and they were really struggling. And, you know, they were just lucky the Bohs didn't end up getting that third goal, because they would have finished it there. But, you know, credit to them, they rallied back in injury time, or not in injury time, in extra time, sorry, and you know, they could easily have won the game in extra time again, but it went to penalties. It was pretty, on the balance of play over 120 minutes, I think it was, you know, there was very little separating, so went to the shootout, and there was a bit of, I don't know if you call it comedy or just bizarre scenes, I suppose. JJ Lunny, who scored the penalty for Bowles during the 90 minutes, he stepped up to take his penalty. It was actually a decent enough penalty. It was at a, you know, it was high. It was towards the corner. It wasn't a bad penalty by any means. But Conor Cairns dived the right way, saved it. The ball came back out, and whatever way it was spinning when it came out of his hands, it just seemed to take a vicious backspin, bounce off the ground, and just trickle over the line. The keeper was on the ground. He couldn't get back to it. It was just, you know, you really, really felt for him. It was just, he made this terrific save, and all of a sudden it's taken away from him by a bit of spin. So, the very next penalty, Paul Doyle misses, and our mate Stokes, he puts the ball away, and that's, you know, Bowles have won. And as Colly O'Neill revealed after the game, Conor Cairns had a very particular reason for being heartbroken.
You say our mate Stokesy. I mean, we haven't managed to get him on the podcast yet. The weather intervenes, so we'll have to get him, because he's been... Yeah, good fortune for Bowles, actually, since he hasn't done the show.
maybe there's something.
Let's hear from Colly O'Neill now, then, UCD manager. As you said, Dave, you got to speak to him after the game. Let's hear that clip now.
That must be tough to take.
It is a little bit hard to take, but as I've been saying, we only have ourselves to blame. We were excellent in the first half, deservedly 2-0 up. Had enough chances in the second half to put it to bed. And even when they got the one back, we literally broke straight away, and Darrow was clean through one-on-one. So it's a little bit hard to take when you've had the chances to go and put it to bed and you've just got done in the end.
Can you pinpoint exactly what went wrong in the second half? You were so good in the first half.
Well, so there would have been a lot of tiredness come in, because the pitch in Cove was really, really soft on Friday. So there was a few tired legs. It also comes down to a lack of experience as well. When Bowes got the first goal back, panicked a little bit, because then it got the crowd up a little bit. And then it's just lack of experience. It's something that we'll learn from.
They did go a bit more direct in the second half and really use their pace to stretch. Is that something maybe you're not used to in the first division?
No, we'd have a lot of teams would be direct and try and stretch us as much as that. It was more of when we won the ball back, we were tired, mentally tired, that we weren't dropping into positions quick enough to go and keep the ball a little bit better in the second half. And I think that's, we just kept on giving the ball back to them a little bit more than we normally would.
I think by full time you kind of looked out on your feet, but I think
you were shattered. There was a lot, I said to them at 90 minutes I was only going to make subs on a priority basis, who wants to come off, and I had about six of them saying me. So yeah, there was a lot of tired legs there.
I think Georgie Kelly looked like he's going to drop dead around 75 minutes.
But in fairness to him, he was the one that said, no, I want to stay on, and I knew from looking at him, I said, no, get off.
And you did kind of pull it together. I thought you'd be the better team the next time.
At that stage, it's really there's so many tired legs out there. It's hard to look at a proper tactical way, because so many bodies are flat out.
And did you back yourselves then in penalties, or was it kind of tiredness?
No, we backed ourselves. Yeah, we always back ourselves. We never not back ourselves. But penalties are just a lottery. You don't know how it's gonna go.
All right, and I suppose, what do you say to Conor now after making a great save and just a bit of backspin puts it into the net and it swings the whole play?
It's nothing you can say to him, especially for a man that is a really, really big Shamrock Rovers fan. So, you know, not much you can say to him.
Not many good memories of penalties, I suppose. But,
no, not really.
How are you fixing it? Who are you playing on Friday?
We have drawn away on Friday, so they've had a good start to the season. We've had a good start, so it's a case of just trying to continue on with the good performances we've had.
All right, and obviously a lot of tired people, but in terms of injuries, it's just Neil and Greg.
It's just Neil Faruga, Greg, and Evan Ozam are the three bodies out at the moment.
Okay, so any prospect that then come back soon?
Greg, none of them will be back for Friday, did nope. Not a few weeks.
All right, cheers. Thanks a minute.
UCD fairly unlucky by the sounds of it, Dave, but from Bo's perspective then, will they be eyeing a bit of a cup run here, or is this more of a... you know, maybe just a sidestep from the league, should they be really focusing on the league? Because you would think ideal for a team who haven't picked up a bit of silverware in the last few years.
Well, they made 10 changes, so I think that really tells you what Keith Long's preference is at the moment. I think Colin McCabe certainly would benefit from a cup run based on his comments there. But I think it'll be the same as last season. I think Bowes got through a couple of rounds, and they got through the second round anyway, and they put out basically a similar enough team that they did tonight against experienced Shelburne team, and just got hammered 3-0, and that was about the end of it. I think Bowles did actually win this a couple of years ago. It was their first silverware in a good few years, but I think I don't think they'll be putting too much stock in this competition or even maybe the FAI Cup. I think the main thing for Bowles this year is probably just first of all to be safe, and second of all to maybe progress on the pitch and move forward again a bit.
Well, off the back of that winner, Daniel Carr scored for Shamrock Rovers against Sligo. He did actually take a bit of time to speak to us here in studio, and I got to speak to him myself for a little while, but there was a bit of an incident at the start, Dave. Just have a listen to this. Daniel Carr, great to have you on. I can say personally I've enjoyed watching you so far at Rovers this season. You seem to have settled right in. Are you enjoying your time here so far?
Yeah, so far I've been loving it.
Will I give that one another go? The phone fall, did it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought I heard it in the background there. Yeah, it didn't go exactly according to plan right at the start. What do you make of that? That was a first for me. I didn't exactly know how to approach it immediately after. To be fair to Daniel, what a pro. He continues answering by the sounds of it when the phone is on the floor.
Yeah, I think you've all handled it like professionals.
Right, well, let's hear the proper interview then.
I'm glad that his control with his feet is better than his control with
his feet. Very nice. Let's hear the proper interview then with Daniel Carr.
You can subscribe to each new episode of the ExtraTime.ie Sportscast on iTunes. Please give a rating or add a comment there to let us know your views.
Daniel Carr, great to have you on. I can say personally I've enjoyed watching you at Rovers so far this season. You seem to have settled right in. Are you enjoying your time here so far?
Yeah, I'm definitely enjoying my time at Rovers so far. I mean, the fans and the players and the coach and staff all welcomed me very well. And I've loved every minute of it so far.
Adding to your goal tally as well the other night against Sligo, I'd say we're very happy indeed. It can be tough enough by the looks of it, getting a couple of opportunities in that Rovers team, because there's a lot of goal-scoring talent and none of you are particularly afraid to have a go.
Yeah, I mean, I've been lucky enough to play with some of the players I have done, and the opportunities I'm getting at the minute has been great. So long may that continue.
Looking back on your career just before you moved here, you've gotten quite a few moves, a good few loan stints, which is always the case, I suppose, for young players when they're starting out. Even spend a bit of time, if I'm not mistaken, over in Sweden at Karlstad BK. How did that come about?
Yeah, an agent, a guy that I know, he's got good links over there to Sweden. And they saw me online, I think they said, and then I went over there for a trial and they liked what they saw. So they said, yeah, they'll sign me, and then that's how I ended up over there.
And what was that experience like? You didn't get too much playing time from what I've read.
I had a lot of injuries there, a couple of suspensions. But overall, my experience, I loved every bit of it in Sweden. Mm. A good life experience as well, and playing-wise, I learned a lot.
Was it tougher maybe to settle in than somewhere like Ireland in the sort of cultural comparison to England?
To be honest, not at all. Like, again, when I went to Sweden, I felt like I settled in quite quickly with the teammates, the coaching staff. From the very first day, I enjoyed it. Like, nothing bad or anything I could say about Sweden, apart from all positives, to be honest with you. It felt so comfortable when I was there. And it's only for injuries and suspensions why I didn't play as much as I'd like to. But that happens, I guess, in football.
Coming across to the league here, what were your expectations of the league? Did you know much about the league when you were coming across?
I knew a little bit because one of my best mates used to play for St. Pat's. And so he would tell me about the league, and since then I would like follow it a bit.
That was going to be one of my questions, actually. Was it Jake? You used to live with Jake Carroll, if I'm not mistaken. He hardly told you to go to Rovers, though, did he, as a Pats man?
I'm not going to say what you said there. I won't write him out there. But Yeah, no, yeah, I used to live with Jakey, a lovely guy, and then so that's how I got to know about the league a bit more. And obviously I watched Shamrock Rovers play Real Madrid 1 year when Ronaldo was playing. So, yeah, they've always been there.
Did you know many of the English players playing here when you came across? You didn't speak to too many of them before coming over?
I think Michael Hector came across when he was young. He was in my same youth team as me when I was at Reading. And so I knew he came across, but not too many others I know came across to Ireland.
Just looking a bit further back in your career, obviously you played for a bit of time at Huddersfield and had a couple of trials with some Premier League clubs or former Premier League clubs even. I suppose in a way you'd have a plenty of similar experience that a lot of players over here. A lot of players over here will have done the same.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to have the trials I've had or to be signed to some good teams I was in England. So I did pick up a bit of experience there when I went across there. So, it wasn't, in terms of level-wise, I wasn't too, didn't feel uncomfortable, I should say. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, and I wonder then, looking at the league over here in recent years, it's been suggested plenty that it's a little bit of a stepping stone now back to that level, I should say. Did you see it that way when you were making the move across, or was it just a case of new challenge, a new experience, something new to try out?
Honest bit of both as well. I mean, I think every player who's playing this league is trying to use it as a stepping stone to be better. But first and foremost, I have to produce for Shamrock. So that's the main target at the minute. I'm not looking, like I say, above beyond the challenge that I have already put in front of me. So the first thing is to keep trying to play well for Shamrock, become a mainstay and hopefully help Shamrock do as well as we can this year.
Yeah, and on that, just touching briefly on some of the teams you played with or would have gotten trials with before, I saw you talk a little bit about wanting to play under Brendan Rodgers, maybe partially for his use of youth players, going with a young squad, giving a lot of players a chance. And I suppose there's comparisons you can make with Stephen Bradley in that way, because he certainly likes to give a lot of young players a shot in that that current and even previous Rovers teams.
Yeah, since I've been there, he's already given quite a few young players. I mean, they train with us all the time. They're on the bench or they come on, a lot of them. And so the gaffer is good with the young players. And also, like Brendan, they like to play a similar type of football, which is what I like to do as well. So it's good for me and the boys, and we're just enjoying it at the minute.
Do you think partially in maybe some of the leagues, in the likes of the Championship or League One, that maybe the young players don't get the exact same chances maybe that they do over here in these kind of teams or under those kind of managers? Does it take a specific manager to bring that out? Because you do find, I suppose, it's result-based, and if you're trying to make a living, you're really just trying to stick with guys you know who will produce.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for me to speak for other managers, but like you said there, if certain managers don't have enough time as other managers do. And to be fair, for this gaffer, he's been, in my experience with him so far, have been brilliant. I mean, he's given a young player the chance. He's a good man manager, I would say, about the gaffer. And he speaks to every player differently, so, because he knows how to get the best out of different players. So, yeah, in that saying that, he's been, I think the last Aaron Boulder's played, Sean Boyd, Dean Dillon's been involved, a couple other youngsters as well who've come up and trained or played or been on the bench. So Gavin, the goalkeeper, there's been quite a few, to be honest. So yeah, I'm quite lucky here.
And just looking at the table at the moment there, Rovers are just about 3 points off the top. I was reading quotes from your manager, Stephen Bradley, this week, sort of reiterating that Rovers need a bit of time to catch up on Dundalk and Cork. But I imagine for you players, it can be hard enough to sort of temper your expectations with such a talented group of players. I'd say you're all fairly hungry to sort of keep going, keep winning and keep challenging.
Yeah, every game, no matter what cup it is or league, or every game we're going to go out there and try, and the aim is to win. I mean, to be honest, from a personal point of view, I don't look at the table too much at the minute because it's still early days. My focus is always on the next game and trying to win that. And then I guess the table takes shape in itself. But, yeah, I mean, there's no secret in it. We want to win as many games as we can. And there's a lot of talented players in this team as well. They have high expectations of themselves and great ambition. So who's to say we can't be up there come the end of the season?
Absolutely. Well, look, Dan, before I let you go then, just a little bit of chat on what we can expect, I suppose, from you for the rest of the season. Hopefully a few more acrobatic celebrations like the other night.
I don't think my gaff is too pleased with me keep doing this. But no, yeah, look, the aim is just to keep scoring. If I keep scoring and I do that, I'm sure you wouldn't mind too much. But definitely from a personal point of view, is just try and score as many goals and help the team in other ways as well, other than scoring, I think, is important as a striker. So, yeah, that's just it with the team as well. Positive.
Daniel Carr, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Log on to extratime.ie.
Two huge games, Dave, for the women's national team. They play Slovakia on April the 6th in Tala Stadium, and also Netherlands on April the 10th, also in Tala Stadium. Sitting second in the group at the moment, second on goal difference, I should point out, to the Netherlands, who they do face, as I said, at the second game. So that could be a bit of a battle for top spot. But as I said, first they play Slovakia, who are very bottom of the group. You look at these two games, I think it's a standard Irish national team thing to do, to look at these and go, 4 points will do us.
Yeah, possibly. I think certainly you'd be expected to beat Slovakia, having won very well 2-0 away. So that's the one you'd expect to win. But as we've seen countless times, the Irish teams at all levels over the past, you know, whoever knows how long, you know, you can get a great away win and then they're coming back and drawing with a team that you'd expect to beat. So, you know, there's no room for complacency here. But I think the really good thing, I suppose, from Ireland's perspective, is that I think Colin Bell kind of ratcheted up the professionalism and the expectations, I guess, driven by the likes of, you know, Katie McCabe and Louise Quinn, real winners who've gone abroad and, you know, succeeded. So I think there's a really good vibe in the camp, and I think they really are in a great position to go and do well, get the 3 points against Slovakia, and who knows what can happen against the Netherlands. You know, they're certainly capable of winning that game as well. Just looking at the Netherlands squad, there's a few players coming back in. McCabe's and Quinn's teammate at Arsenal, Daniela van der Donk, is coming back. That's a big one for them. There's a good few sort of players at big clubs, the likes of Arsenal, Bayern Munich in that squad. So they're certainly not going to be daunted by coming to Tala Stadium and playing. But I think Ireland are very much capable of getting at least a draw out of this match, and it'll be very interesting to see. I'm not going to be able to make it to the Slovakia match myself, and I'm cup tied him up in Dalyman for the Bowls and Limerick game, but I'm definitely going to be going to the home Netherlands game on Tuesday. I'm going to be really looking forward to it, and hopefully we go into it with 3 points, and who knows what we'll come out with.
Yeah, looking at our own squad as well, Harriet Scott added to the injury list, which was also featuring Stephanie Roach and Megan Campbell out for a while, but there's a few faces added in. We spoke, of course, last year to Dervla Byrne. I think Megan Connolly's gone in there as well, and Anya O'Gorman.
Yeah, they're good faces to have back. I think Steph Roach and Anya O'Gorman both injured themselves in the first game of the group, the win over Northern Ireland and Lurgan. So, you know, they've both been out for quite some time, and Anya's back. She's really firing in the league at the moment. She has 3 goals in 2 games since coming back to the team. And so, you know, good core players in there who are in decent form. And I think certainly I don't think anyone in the squad is going to be daunted by the prospect, but again, I think the fact that a few of the players in the squad are just starting out in their seasons, whereas a lot of the Dutch players might be further into their seasons, maybe there'll be a little bit of a fitness advantage for the Netherlands there, and maybe a few more players at fully professional clubs. But you know, these are the sort of games there where you kind of stand up and be counted, and I think an awful lot of talent in that Ireland squad who don't lack for confidence either, and I'm just looking forward to the game.
Absolutely. Hopefully they kick on, and maybe don't have to be doing that old 4 points will do us. Like as I said, there's a chance to top the group here. And with the previous game 0-0, now at home, you'd be thinking, look, go on, top it. You have a great chance there. Some other good news. The under-17s qualifying for the Euros is pretty, reads well for the future. And also, just to point out as well, they have Conor Masterson sitting on the bench for Liverpool tonight, as they, even though they have a few injuries at the back, I think, but still great news. Young player like that in amongst the top clubs in England, we don't seem to get too much of that anymore. So sitting on the bench for Liverpool tonight as they play Manchester City.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot of confidence in the country at the moment in those sort of young men's teams and young women's teams, and I think particularly in the in those under 17s, as you said, they've qualified for the Euros, 6 wins out of 6. The only team in Europe to get 6 wins out of 6, and they're the top rated team in Europe at the moment outside of the whole England. We're going to avoid them obviously in the groups because we're both top seeds. So, you know, it's all good news from the under-17s point of view. I think there's a very good chance that they can go to England next year, or next month, sorry. Draw will actually be made on Thursday afternoon, so it'll be interesting to find that out. But, yeah, no, they're going to head there with a lot of confidence. I was actually talking yesterday to Sean Brennan, the Southampton player, the son of the former Shelburne midfielder, Anto Brennan. If anybody remembers, you know, he's, you know, full of confidence. He scored 2 goals in 2 games in the D-League qualifiers. And, you know, I think just looking around the squad in general, there's so much talent in there. Adam Ida up front, he scored 7 goals in the first round of qualifying. There's, you know, just an awful lot of good young players who are really coming through at the moment. And it's really exciting to see. And I'm genuinely confident that, you know, with Colin O'Brien as their coach, they can go over there and really, really make a dent, improve on last year's quarterfinals finish, and, you know, possibly even get to the final and win it.
That's, everyone's ears pricked up at that, I think. Right, let's briefly just look ahead to some of the upcoming league games, as we do at the end of the show. Two very big games, actually, here for sort of the top and the bottom of the table, even though Stephen Bradley might not like us calling it the top of the table. Dundalk play Shamrock Rovers up in Oriel. Has the potential to be very, very interesting, this one. If Rovers were to, I suppose, you know, force Dundalk into conceding, that would be, you know, be enough in itself that Dundalk haven't conceded all year, and Rovers are the team with such a brilliant attacking prowess that they could certainly cause a bit of trouble. But I think Dundalk will be hoping for, you know, same old, maybe just dispatch of Rovers in this game and sort of, look, we're back on track, we're going to be challenging, and we're going to be running away with it again.
Yeah, I think it'll be a more open game than the home game between them and Talladega, 0-0. Certainly with Dundalk cracking on a bit more now and scoring a few more goals, they're maybe a bit more confident in front of goal. At home, they're always expected to go out there and dominate the ball and score goals and play positively, and, you know, maybe leave a little bit of room at the back for the likes of Dan Kerr and Brian Burke, great talents like that. So I think it has potential to be a very interesting game, but we've seen over the past few years, they generally haven't been hugely high-scoring games, but certainly last season, plenty of entertaining games between the two teams. So hopefully that continues in the televised game.
What way do you see it going?
I'd give it to Dundalk at the moment. I think you know, Rovers have improved. They're still improving, but I just think, you know, Dundalk, to me, look like the best team in the league at the moment, and I think they will get the job done, but they'd be fairly narrow. So maybe 2-1 Dundalk.
By the looks of Duffy, for me, he's been sort of winding up to this. It looks like he'll hopefully kick on now, and not that he hasn't previously, but, you know, it looks like he'll be such an important player for them that he could be one of those sort of big deciding factors in games, I think, going forward for them. Bowes Limerick is another one that stands out, the second of the two big games, mostly because you could argue this is maybe for one of the relegation spots at this point. Now, we've talked about Bowes maybe being a little bit more comfortable than the results suggest, but look, another heavy defeat for them last week. This is a game they 100% will be saying, look, we have to win this. No doubt. If we're going to kick on away from relegation, we need to beat Limerick. But look, Limerick, I think, you know, they're flexible. They switched to a 3-5-2, I believe, reading reports in the last game there. So they'll be, you know, they're pragmatic enough. They'll be confident enough. They can probably nick something from this.
Yeah, it's hard to know. I think we spoke, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago after the Limerick and Rovers game in relation to the way that Limerick play, and maybe Limerick like to take advantage of the poor pitch that's up there in the Marks Field at the moment. And, you know, they're a very disciplined, well-drilled team, and they, you know, kind of, you know, shut up a bit and maybe affect teams that like to play the ball around a little bit. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how they do up in Dalyman Park now. It hasn't been two games, it's been one game, but it was a game on a very heavy surface, put up an awful lot, particularly in the second half and then extra time on Monday. So I'm not sure how well that pitch will recover, particularly with the rain and the couple of days since. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see just how well the pitch maintains itself there, and whether, you know, Bowes are in the mood to play a bit of football, or if they, you know, the confidence is a bit down at Bohemians at the moment. Maybe if they'll just be a bit more direct, and it might be one of those games where the two teams sort of cancel each other out. But I'm really excited to see King Coleman for Limerick. I've heard rave reports about him in the last few weeks. I saw him a couple of times at Cove, and he was, you know, particularly good. But particularly good. If that sounds like I said not particularly good, he was particularly good. So, you know, I'm excited to see how he's doing for Limerick. And, you know, I don't want to predict a good game, but because it never works out. But I'm not going to predict a bad game. I just hope that it works out for me and actually enjoy the game in Daly Moon Park.
Can you predict the score for us?
0-0.
I'm going to go, and I know it's going to be slightly biased, but I'm going to go with Limerick to nick it, actually. I've been impressed with, even though they've not all been the most exciting games, but we talked to Tommy Bard a bit at the start of the year when I sort of put tactical questions to him. He's a bit like, nah, whatever, yeah. But he's actually, I think, been quite good tactically. I think they've, you look at some of the games they've played so far, how they've set up and how they've changed and adapted to each game. I think they look to sort of particularly prey on opponents' weaknesses. I think they've done that quite effectively. I could see Limerick getting a bit of a surprising result there. Let's talk about a few more games then. Waterford Cork looks like it could be interesting again. The you know, we talked about Waterford. I wouldn't say pretenders, but you know, maybe not going to be banged there at the top of the start of the season. Or are they? If they beat Cork, you're going to have to start talking about them as potential challengers.
I think you would. Yeah, I think maybe there's a little bit of a parallel this season between Waterford and Bray last season in terms of, you know, the investment they've made trying to get top Premier Division players into a side that maybe hasn't competed in a while, and, you know, seeing the results of that early in the season, they've had a great start, and you know, I think they'd really set down a marker if they did go and get a result against Cork, having by all accounts played quite well in the game in Turner's Cross. I think they did quite well in Oriel Park as well, and were very unlucky to concede the winner at the end. They've beaten Rovers and Derry City both at home. So, you know, they've either beaten or done well against teams around them. So they're certainly shown that they kind of compete at this level. Whether that continues for the rest of the season, it's hard to know. But at the moment, they do have their tails up. And if you're a Cork City fan, you might be a little bit reticent going into this game. So it'll be interesting to see.
Right, so prediction on that one?
I fancy Waterford will score anyway. I have an odd feeling there might be a 1-0 Waterford.
Oof, big upset there. If you were looking at a betting front, Cork, both teams that score would be the obvious one, because I think, as you said, there should be goals in that one. Let's quickly then get through the rest. Pats Bray, how do you see that one going?
Yeah, I think it has to go Pats. I think they didn't get the result last week, but they do seem to be playing better football than they were at the start of the season. And even at the start of the season, they did beat Bray away. So I think they're a better team, and I think they'll get the job done. And, you know, I think it's quite possible that they will get back into it. We talked earlier about maybe they're being a bit shy in front of goal. I think this might be the perfect game for the likes of Jake Peegan to get off the mark, and maybe Christy Fagan to get back on the score sheet and, you know, get their confidence up and start, you know, start kicking on towards the part of the table that they want to be in.
And finally, Sligo Derry.
Yeah, that's in Sligo.
It's in Sligo, yeah. It's on the Saturday.
Yeah, the first game of the season was also in Sligo, wasn't it? Or the first meeting was from the rescheduled Brandywell, from the redeveloped Brandywell, sorry. I think, you know, it's difficult to know. Sligo did win that game at the start of the season, but I think Derry's gotten better. Seen Sligo play last week, they're quite tootless. I think they're obviously, it's going to be different at home, but I'd fancy Derry just get the win this time. I'd say maybe 1-0, maybe 2-1, Nicky.
I think those two games that we mentioned at the end probably a bit more predictable. I'd be agreeing with you, Pats to win and Derry to win looks likely. Right, Dave, thanks very much for joining us again.
Cheers, you're welcome.
And thanks very much to you for listening. As always, you can get us on at ET Sportscast on Twitter, at Extra Time News on Facebook, or extratimelive@gmail.com. We'll speak to you soon.